starting gunners fired across Europe from France to Spain, and Serie A's the last of the lot to take the line again. Another season played out across the Azzurri blue, and who can stop Juve's dream of 9 in a row from coming true? We start in Turin with Sarri in and a depth that few can boast. Matthias De Ligt joins the ranks to boost a defensive host. Aaron Ramsey, Rabiot, Buffon back once more, and CR7's forward line shaking defences to the core. From black and white to black and blue, Conte crosses the divide. Arch enemy to the mister now, it's going to be some ride. It's three at the back and Rom in attack and a new era dawns at Inter. Is this the time to shake off the drama and leave behind that winter? And on the red side of Milan, a sleeping giant wakes. The Rossoneri back alive. Has Gianpaolo got what it takes to take them back to the top of the game, to the pinnacle, to the peak? Can he ignite the old San Siro flame and end this barren streak? In Naples, dreams of James have ground themselves to dust. For the perennial challengers, the eternal bridesmaids, trophies are a must. With Carlo there, there's always hope that this could be their year. Facing Sarri, a Greek god at the back, and Napoli have no fear. And what about Atalanta? First time in the UCL. Papu Gomez dancing away. Things are going swell. Can they keep up the battle on home soil and on tour? Because fighting on two fronts is a surefire way to lose a war. Rome's alive as well. The eternal battle in the eternal city. With Lazio and Roma, there's no mercy. There's no pity. The Olimpico burns. The rivalry scorches. The city set ablaze. Where a derby win is heaven and a loss the end of days. Ribery and Viola. Ballo at Brescia. Raja Cagliari. It's chaos and it's magic, and we're all excited, aren't we? Italy stirs, Calcio back, the latest of the lot. Watch out, world, the stars align. Serie A coming in hot.
Can you not do this in your spare time?
Yeah, I mean, I probably could, but it's not so much fun if people don't get to listen to it, do they? Special. Welcome to VR Football Ranks, ladies and gentlemen. As you might have guessed, it's a Calcio special this week as we gear up for the start of Serie A. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today. And with me is the rank god himself, still refreshed and radiant from your travels, I see, Sam. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you very much. I am good.
Well, it's time for hot takes. What have you got for me this week?
So, Friday, La Liga kickoff. Barcelona lost 1-0.
They did, yeah.
Bad start, huh? Bad start. And lots of people, I would say, or I've seen, are suggesting that this is kind of proof that they still need to recruit a certain individual from Brazil, Neymar. But I don't necessarily see it that way.
Okay.
I think while Neymar would obviously be a massive help to any team because he's an amazing footballer, the problems on Friday were, well, first of all, you lost to an absolute wonder goal and you hit, and you hit the crossbar and post twice. So it's fine margins. Luis Suarez went off injured. So again, one of those things. Sometimes things go wrong on a football pitch, but also probably more a case of Ernesto Valverde, the manager, kind of needs to get to grips with his new team and his new pieces that he's acquired, because we saw Griezmann start off the left flank and we saw him and Jordi Alba. Like, do they actually know each other's first names? Like, they definitely didn't have a relationship. Jordi Alba looked shocked that there was anyone ahead of him, because he generally gets the entire left flank to play with. And any winger that they play off the left will always cut inside. And Griezmann actually spent quite a lot of time stretching out to the wide areas to try and, you know, stretch the pitch out, which is fair enough. But Alba was like quite confused by it.
Yeah.
So there's actually no relationship on that left-hand side. The midfield makeup, while it probably will work in future, Frenkie de Jong has played in a basically a double pivot, a midfield two in a 4-2-3-1 for both Ajax and the Netherlands. So his partner in those scenarios, Lasse Schöner for Ajax and Martin de Roon for the Netherlands during the UEFA
Nations
League.
Best social media account on
best,
Twitter.
Best under the radar football social media account.
Absolutely,
for sure. 100%. He's brilliant. So playing him as the deepest midfielder, the sole pivot in a 4-3-3, I think it will eventually work. But for now, you're basically asking him to do something that actually he doesn't do that often. And you're asking him to do it under one hell of a microscope. Opening game of Barcelona's campaign, in which they are expected to not only win La Liga, but probably go on and win the Champions League as well. So I appreciate there's no Messi. And I appreciate that's probably why some people are saying, oh, you need Neymar in case you don't have Messi. This team should still be good enough to beat Athletic Club, as good as they were.
They were really good.
They were really good. Adderley scored an amazing goal. Defensively, they were very compact.
Iñaki Williams was absolutely sensational.
Iñaki put in one of the biggest shifts I've ever seen from a striker. And Raul Garcia, still going, put on. He basically man-marked Frenkie de Jong. These are just teething problems for their new squad. This is not evidence that you need to pay another 200 million euros to buy
Dembele's got injured again now, though.
He has.
Another 5 weeks out.
Coutinho's gone and Dembele's injured. Honestly, once Messi comes back and once he starts to iron out the kinks in this side, it will be fine. I'm not saying Neymar wouldn't help.
No.
But this is not definitive proof that they have to have him. This is just Ernesto Valverde basically misusing his players.
Okay.
All right, so it's a managerial issue as opposed to a personnel issue.
I think so.
Say.
Yeah.
My hot take is related, so let's keep it rolling.
Okay.
It's that Philippe Coutinho, obviously left by Barcelona to go to Bayern, is a brilliant signing for Bayern Munich.
Fair
and
enough.
This is something that's been hotly debated on social media this week. Look, I know he hasn't had the best of times at Barcelona. There are people out there saying he's been passed around like a parcel, you know, across the big clubs of Europe, which I think is a little bit harsh. But at Barcelona, he's been played basically out on the wing where he's not that comfortable. And I think this all changes under Kovac at Bayern. I think he takes Hammers' spot as the 10 with two of Perisic or Koeman or Gnabry wide of him. And I think this is where he gets his mojo back. We know how good he can be. And I think if he can start pulling the strings in the midfield three there behind Lewandowski, I think it makes Bayern favourites for the Bundesliga title again.
Nice.
There's my hot take.
That is a hot take. I like half of that take because I think Coutinho is amazing. He's been misused. He's been passed around. He needs a bit of rehab. And whoever gives him that rehab is going to have a phenomenal player on their hands. Absolutely. I mean, shades of Hammers joining, isn't it? A couple of years ago. I mean, there's
not quite as deep in the mire. But
no, yeah. But it's a similar scenario in which you're basically borrowing a player who's down on his luck, but you know can be amazing. Hammers was good in fits and starts. Coutinho needs to be good every single week.
Yeah.
And he can be because he's amazing. However, I don't think it tips them over the edge. I'm still back in Dortmund. And like what I saw from them on the opening weekend, that blitz, that attacking blitz, it's very difficult to change my mind here.
They're very good.
And here's where I'll pull you on it, basically. Coutinho, great. But I still think that in Royce and Sancho, they probably have a better attacking force. Sancho, I think, could do destructive things this season to the point where he may just be in that Player of the Year conversation. Involved in all five goals at the weekend. Just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. And then,
an absurd
talent. Then potentially more important is that I think Lucien Favre is a better manager than Niko Kovac.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
And those things combined, Coutinho is not quite enough for me to change that prediction, which was, of course, Dortmund to win the league.
I think
it's closer. It's really close now, but it's not enough to tip my...
I think that's fair enough. I also think this rests on whether Coutinho gets played in his favourite position or not. If Kovac starts to play Coutinho wide,
yeah,
then we're in all sorts of trouble. Like, well, I mean, Coutinho.
I mean, he'll be fine there.
Yeah, 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 of course. But that's not going to be the rehab he needs and the kind of pulling the strings central position that he needs to have in order to kind of find his mojo again.
So if you want Coutinho to come inside and pull the strings, presumably from a number 8 or number 10 role or a hybrid of each, are you worried about Thiago?
I'm not worried about him because I also think that a midfield three of Thiago, Coutinho and Leon Goretzka is maybe the greatest thing that's ever happened. But I do I'm concerned slightly about the lack of defensive nous, shall we say, in there.
I mean, they've got other players to use. You don't have to use Goretzka there. You can use Martinez. I just wonder if
I think Thiago and Coutinho could be the greatest link up outside of two Barcelona players outside Barcelona for forever, maybe.
Two little dancers on the pitch.
I think it'd be magnificent to watch them both in action for full time. So that's good. As ever, we let you decide the third hot take for day in the poll, and we asked you which of the homegrown playmakers making their way in the Premier League for the first time that you wanted us to discuss. So we offered you Chelsea's Mason Mount and Arsenal's Joe Willock. An astounding 2/3, 67% of the vote went to Mason Mount. Sam, I know you are a massive Mason Mount fan, and thus I'm going to throw this to you. And you have been for some time, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I'm surprised that the Arsenal Twitter didn't turn up for Willock here.
Yeah.
We've heard so much about Arsenal Twitter. You never
underestimate Arsenal Twitter, that's the key.
I think we may have overestimated them.
No, I think maybe they just didn't care that much about Joe Willock at this point.
Well, that's harsh. But anyway, we're here to talk about Mason Mount. And I have been a fan of his for a while. I wrote an article for Bleacher Report in 2017 about him when he was playing for the Chelsea youth side. Since then, he's taken on loans. He went to Vitesse. He went to Derby, played under Frank Lampard, and has now started the season for Chelsea. He's got the guy who he's actually been likened to in some ways in terms of in the way he arrives late in the box and finishes. That's a very Frank Lampard trait. That's kind of called the Frank Lampard late run into the penalty box. So he's got that trait, and he's got the guy who mastered it coaching him. He's got that belief. Mount plays with an incredible amount of enthusiasm, but also a lot of guile. I'm starting to wonder if he ends up a little bit like a kind of a Dele Alli second striker presence. I once had him pegged as an Adam Lallana, because he's so silky and fluid.
Yeah.
Plays on the turn, plays quickly.
That was probably a compliment when you said it.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't be anymore.
2.5 years ago, that was a compliment, yeah. But actually, pressing and off-balance shooting.
Yeah, really good.
are two of his best traits. Like, it doesn't really matter what body shape his position is in. He'll probably find the net or come close. He scored his first goal for Chelsea at the weekend, and he was completely off balance. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous. And it came from him pressing his opposition into submission, taking the ball off him and putting it in the net. It was fantastic.
I thought he was excellent first half of the weekend. And something that struck me was that it's the first time really that we've seen him play through the middle. Obviously, he's been sort of shifted left and right with Barkley. And I know they've been sort of interchanging.
Yeah.
But it's the first time you saw him with two natural wide men either side of him.
Yeah.
And I thought, I was wondering if that made a difference.
Well, at Old Trafford, first of all, as we said last week, like, they're very unlucky to lose that game 4-0. And they
not
had
to lose the game, just to lose
4-0. To lose 4-0, yeah. And they had their chances early on. And Mount was very bright in those first 20 minutes. Very, very bright indeed. And he was again against Leicester. Lampard played Barkley and Mount in that game. And I feel like it didn't really work. Scoreline says, fair enough.
Scoreline says it didn't.
But I do feel, because Barkley had a very good preseason. And it was almost like he was loath to leave him out as a result of that, but also wanted to put his stall out and say, I believe in the youth, I believe in Mason Mount. So he fielded the both, it did work. So he went back to basically what he probably wanted to do in the first place against Leicester and played two wingers and played Mason Mount. And it was much, much better. So Pulisic, Pedro, Mount is a front three or attacking midfield three that I'm really excited about. And if Mount has the talent to become a very, very, very good player. And if he develops into the sort of Dele Alli, second striker, hybrid, attacking mid type, who chips in with 10 goals, which he did at Derby,
and
he could easily do so at Chelsea, he'll have an extremely successful season. And I think he'll capture the whole country and the whole world's imagination.
I think there's one thing to be said here, and it's a negative in some regards. But for me, Ruben Loftus-Cheek is potentially the most important player in this Chelsea side, bar, you know, the centre-backs
and Kante.
Maybe Kante. Sorry, and obviously Kante.
Obviously.
Because he's so crucial to how they get up and down the pitch, and his like mobility and physicality and his presence is so key. When he comes back from injury, the only player I can see him replacing is Mount.
That could be the case. I mean, look, by that point, Jorginho could be under threat. Kovacic could be under threat. We don't know exactly how that plays out. The problem Ruben Loftus-Cheek has is not anything to do with talent. It's the fact that he's got quite a bad injury history already for someone who isn't that old. And he is basically in a position where, as talented as he is, and he's amazing, you can't rely on him. Like, his body is not responding to what he does to it. And that's really sad. But Chelsea cannot be in a situation where they call Ruben Loftus-Cheek one of their key players and a player that they absolutely require to have a good game to be good. They need other plans. And that's where Mount comes in here. Like, it's another academy product, which is great. But you need to be able to pivot away from relying on Ruben Loftus-Cheek, because he has proven over the last couple of years that his body can't really deal with it.
Okay.
It sucks. I hate saying it.
It's sad. It is sad because he is such a talent.
Yeah.
Well, that is us all done for Hot Takes, which leads us on to this week's Big Rankings. We're going to be welcoming a very special guest to talk Calcio after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to BR Football Ranks, where it is time for this week's big ranking. Today, we're going to take a look through Serie A and see who the challenges to Juventus are. In short, ranking the five teams who are best placed to challenge Juventus for that Serie A crown. To help us out, we've brought through a very special guest. And this one makes me very happy because it's very much hashtag one of our own. Bleacher Report Football's very own Serie A aficionado, Mr. Alex McGovern, known around this office as Calcio Gov. Alex, a genuine pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome to the Rank Squad.
I'm glad that nickname's in the public domain now.
Yeah, no, it's no longer a secret. You are very much now in the public eye as Calcio Gov. So we're going to talk about challenges to Juventus, but it would make no sense to not first discuss the champions themselves. So Sam, I'm going to throw this one to you quickly. Juventus were very good last year and they've got even better.
Yeah, we don't mean to disrespect everybody by ranking them as contenders, but let's be frank, Juventus won the league for the last 8 years and the summer work has been very, very strong. They now have one of the deepest squads in terms of quality and quantity, potentially in Europe, maybe the deepest, best squad in Europe. They've got Ronaldo. They've got a new manager whose philosophy will probably suit their ball-playing players a lot better. I think Juventus will be a better watch. They won't be reduced to just crossing the ball into the box of Mandzukic and Ronaldo, which used to really annoy me.
Did work
last season. I mean, it did work to a point. Didn't get what they wanted, though, did they?
No.
Champions League, so something to work on. So it's no disrespect to the others, But we basically just can't foresee a scenario in which Juventus don't win a ninth straight title. And that's because they are ominous. They are all-powerful. They are consistent. They are brilliant.
They're very much the big bad wolf.
Yeah.
Gov, I know that you are a big Sarri fan. And how do you think that transition is going to work for Juventus this summer?
I think it's a tough one. I mean, he's very much a process manager. I think it could take Sarri a while to get going. And, you know, a year ago, I couldn't see the streak ending. I couldn't see who could possibly beat them. But the arrival of certain people in the division and the arrival of Sarri, who might take a little bit of time to get going, I actually think this is the best chance in the 8 years for someone else to take the crown. So I think there's a fair chance of it happening this year.
Okay.
I like it. I like the optimism.
I do. So
I wish I had it.
I know. Well, Gov does, and that's what's important here. So that's the champions. Let's take a look at the contenders. And so, Alex, you're going to work us through from 5 to 1 the teams you think are best placed to stick it to Piemonte Calcio this season. We'll start at 5 and work through to 1.
And by 5, it's the 6th place team in the table. We're basically working up the table.
Cool.
So where are we going with 6th?
All right. So, bottom of our rankings, I've got Roma.
Oh.
I know
Sam loves Roma.
I know. And it's going to surprise a few, but I think their squad is just not strong enough.
Okay.
They've not got enough good players now. There's chaos off the pitch. You know, we saw when Totti left at the end of last season, him calling out the management, criticising everything that's going on at the club. They've got De Rossi, who's just left for Boca Juniors as well, in really bad fashion, the way that the club let him go.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a leadership void in the squad. Manolas, their best defender, has just gone to Napoli.
Yeah.
So
fair. Also, they're trying to repair from Monchi, because Monchi wasn't that much of a success, was he,
no,
as the sporting director at Roma? He's gone back to Sevilla now. It does feel like some of their transfer work has been to kind of rectify what he did, almost.
Yeah, I think so. We've seen like Nzonzi leave and a few others as well. And really, not many of his signings did particularly well. They brought in a few good players, like Paulo Lopez, formerly of Betis.
Rest in peace.
Jack, there's always a Betis one, isn't there?
There's always a link.
There's always a link, yeah. Paulo Lopez is a huge upgrade on Robin Olsen.
Very, very good keeper.
I think most people would be at this point.
Okay, well, listen, I understand your concerns about the squad, but the manager, Paulo Fonseca, is kind of one of my favourites. Okay. I think where they do lack a little bit in quality, and I will accept that, they will wow us on the pitch with the style. What he managed to do, what Fonseca managed to produce at Shakhtar Donetsk, was consistently great. And some of the signings that they've made this summer, like Diawara to control midfield and Spinazzola to rampage forward on the left, I think they can have a very big impact. I probably would have had Roma in a similar position to you had they not tied down Edin Dzeko.
Okay.
And that, for me, was a huge piece of business and a huge move for them, because they not only does that keep just a prolific striker. I know you're a big, big fan of Big Edin.
Yeah, for sure.
But also means that they don't have to worry about buying a striker, as well as solving the clear centre-back issue.
The only thing about that is that I saw mooted in the press, and obviously it's been swapped deal summer, as you know, Sam. But so mooted in the press that there was a potential swap deal between Icardi and Dzeko. Now, I think Icardi is the perfect striker for a Fonseca system. I know Icardi comes with all the baggage. I appreciate that.
Yeah, Gov was just talking about carnage off the pitch. What, you trying to create
well,
more?
I mean, there's more carnage off the pitch. You may as well just throw it all in together and see what happens.
No.
And I know Icardi comes with that baggage, but for a Fonseca system, he is the kind of perfect striker, because the striker just is a goal scorer, a poacher, and Dzeko's a wonderful player. I'm not trying to take away from him. But he's more than that. He's more than just a killer in the box.
Yeah, of course. So he'll be even better.
Okay.
I think Icardi guarantees goals wherever he goes. But clearly, all he wants is Juventus or pretty much nobody. You know, there's a small chance of Napoli happening at the moment. Yeah, like you say, Roma's mooted. The other option they were looking at supposedly is Higuain. And I'm not sure he's the answer to anyone's problem.
No, I don't think so. Not at this point.
So, yeah. I don't know. I agree. I think Dzeko's going to be key to have kept.
Yeah.
Zaniolo is another bright spark. He's really, really good. I think he can have a big season. Hopefully Justin Kluivert might come good. There are some bright sparks, but...
Yeah, there are a fair few breakout candidates here.
Yeah.
Justin Kluivert is absolutely one of them. And Cengiz Under needs to break back out,
I was
going to say.
Had a breakout season, went back under the radar, and now needs another breakout season.
I think there's potential for maybe 5 or 6 of them. And if 2 of them come off, they might surprise us a little bit. But I completely understand where you're going there. So let's move on to the next team.
Okay, so next up, in number four, I've got Marco Giampaolo's new look Milan.
Okay.
So he's just arrived from Sampdoria, replacing club legend Gennaro Gattuso. And they've made a number of good signings. I think a few players that you're going to like as well. I can't see him challenging the top three. I think that's going to be a step too far for them.
Okay.
Challenging the sort of fourth, fifth, maybe third, depending on how the next club on the ranking gets on. But I think they've made some good signings. So Bennacer is going to be a really good signing from Empoli.
Yeah.
So he impressed when they went down last season, despite them going down. He's got the momentum. He just won African Cup of Nations of Algeria, was named player of the tournament.
Yeah.
So he looks like he's going to be a really important signing.
And what's he going to do for them exactly?
Giampaolo's going to play a midfield diamond.
Yeah.
So whether he plays probably at the base, but possibly on one of the wide roles, along with the likes of kind of Frank Kessier. Suso probably going to play as the number 10.
Yeah.
If he stays, we'll come on to Suso.
He'll stay. Carry on.
I think he'll stay. We've got Krunic, who's also arrived from Empoli as well. So we've got a number of good players.
Juan Aventura is in there somewhere as well, isn't he? And
yeah, exactly. We'll see how he is after his injuries.
Yeah.
And they've got a good defence as well now, when everyone's fit. I think Massi Alcantara is a brilliant player when he can be fit. So we'll see if that happens. But that kind of that back line of Donnarumma, Caldara, Romagnoli, Calabria and Theo Hernandez, the new signing.
Yeah.
I think Theo Hernandez is a brilliant signing. Obviously, the diamond that Giampaolo employs in midfield doesn't allow for that much width. So you need your fullbacks to provide for the front two and give them something to play off. And Theo Hernandez, if he gets back to that rampaging Alaves best that we saw of him, is the perfect player to do that. If he can rumble up and down that touchline and get the ball into the middle for the likes of Piontek and whoever decides to partner him, you know, there's been whispers of Correa, there's been all sorts of people linked with partnering Piontek up front. But if Theo can get the ball into those areas, that's a brilliant, brilliant signing for Milan.
It's a tough role to play when you play as a fullback in a diamond because that midfield is so narrow and because you have no winger ahead of you. Yep, the strikers can dip wide on occasion, but they don't usually use that area. It's basically all on you to hold the width of the entire team all the way up and down the pitch. It takes a really quite a powerful and stamina-heavy kind of like energetic player to really manage that. To do, as you say, to kind of rumble or rampage. We use those words because they need to really shoot forward with venom in order to hold that entire width. And Theo is that guy.
Yeah.
In a way that maybe Ricardo Rodriguez isn't. He's a more of a tepid player. I don't think he gives you that oomph necessarily. So I understand the signing there. We were questioning earlier in the summer, weren't we? How many left-backs does the team actually need? Because Lechout's still kicking around, isn't he? But
yeah, he'll be off somewhere soon.
Yeah,
one of them is going to leave.
We shall see. But we're pretty excited about Milan. So you've got them in fifth place in the table and fourth in the ranking.
Is there any drawbacks? You know, where are Milan going to fall down? You said you don't see them really pushing on to challenge. You know, we talked a lot about how good these players are they've brought in. Where do you see them falling down?
So the strikers now, they've got Piontek, going to be partnered by Rafael Leao as it stands, the young Lille forward. Talking about Angel Correa as well. So is Leao going to take a bit of time to get going? And Correa, I'm not sure he's a 40, 50 million euro player. You guys might have other takes on
not
that.
Not really, no.
So, we like him.
Yeah.
We like Correa, but we're not sure he's a 40, 15 million euro
player. We said that a lot about players this summer.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. Don't pay that much for him.
That's our take on most things, I think. Yeah. But yeah, and, so that's where.
Yeah, exactly. And the benefit they have got is not playing in European competition. They've dropped out as part of their kind of financial fair play agreement. So they're going to have that advantage over some other clubs who have got a heavier workload. We've seen over the last few years that can make a big difference.
Yeah.
So that's in their advantage too. So I think Milan, they're not there yet and they're not ready to challenge with kind of the next few clubs. But they're moving in the right direction for what feels like the first time in a while.
Okay. Maybe just a bit of adaption. And maybe just...
I think it's how long it takes to fit into this Giampaolo. It's not a normal system. People don't play with a diamond that often these days in the modern game because of what we said before, the lack of width that it offers you and the kind of support you don't get down the flanks, especially with overlapping fullbacks and people really focusing down those sides. So we'll see how long it takes for them to get used to that. I think it is something worth pointing out.
And they're possibly missing a number 10 as well. I mean, Suso is naturally a winger. Looks like he's been playing as a number 10. It's not really his ideal position.
How we love Suso. No Suso slander. No Suso slander.
And they've got Lucas Paqueta too.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see how he does. He's a super talented player, so maybe he'll fill that role.
Is it just a case of maybe they just have 5% or maybe 10% less quality than the clubs that we're going to come on to. Like it's all kind of shaping up for them, but they're just a little bit off.
Yeah,
and there's nothing wrong with that, Milan, because you've been lounging a little bit recently. So baby steps.
So that's so we've basically done the Europa League spots. We've gone sixth and fifth in the table, kind of accordingly. Mm-hmm. Is there any honourable mentions you want to give for those spots before we move into the Champions League, I guess?
Yeah, so quick shout out to Lazio.
shout out my guy Sergei.
Well, exactly. A couple of years ago, Lazio was sensational. They scored the most goals in the league. They should have qualified for the Champions League if it wasn't for that crazy final game where
goodness me.
De Vrij already signed for Inter. He's playing for Lazio. It's basically a playoff to qualify for the Champions League. He gives away a penalty. Icardi scores an Inter qualify. The craziest final game of the season.
That was amazing.
So, that was Serie A in a nutshell, really, wasn't it?
It really was. It really was. So much. Yeah. So they were great a couple of seasons ago. Last year had a bit of a down year. Milinkovic-Savic wasn't so good. Picked up towards the end.
Yeah.
Luis Alberto.
A little bit deeper.
Yeah, exactly. Luis Alberto didn't put up the same numbers he did the year before. Immobile too. So I think they've got a lot there to bounce back. They've got the tools to have a good season. So it was hard to leave them off this list. They're really going to be in the mix for the top six. Definitely.
But you've got them at seventh place, more or less.
Essentially, yeah.
Any love for Fiorentina, the club that Jack cursed?
Well, the club that almost got relegated on the final day.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean,
about the time Franck Ribéry.
Well, yeah. When you put it like that, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot of things going on in Fiorentina. I think that this is a stabilisation year. If Fiorentina finish in the top half this year, that's a good season as far as...
Are you familiar with what concerned. He did to them?
He did to them, no.
They were doing fine. Then he went to visit them once. Went to Florence on holiday in February, March.
February, yeah.
And they didn't win another game.
they drew with Lazio the day I was there. And then they went on to lose, I think, 9 of the next 11. And then, didn't win a game until the end of the season. And only basically stayed up because there were worse teams than them. And that is, it was really bad. But I think things are on the up for the Viola.
I think so, too. The new project looks good.
Yeah, it does. Right, let's get into these Champions League spots.
Into the top four. Come on.
Who have you got a third in the ranking?
And therefore fourth in the table.
Well, not necessarily. Gov might think that someone is going to challenge for the crown.
That's true, I guess.
So third in your ranking.
Fair point. So I've got Atalanta.
Okay.
Fourth. So they really were the best story of last season, I think. As a bit of context, Atalanta have not been a big club over the years at all. Pre-Gasperini, the manager joining in 2016, they were finishing between 12th and 17th. And he's really brought them up over the last few years. So they came third last year. It's their first ever Champions League season this year. So that's a concern to bear in mind. You know, how are they going to deal with the workload of that? But they're a brilliant side to watch. They scored the most goals in Serie A last season. Even outscoring Ronaldo and Juventus. I think only in Europe's top five leagues, they're only outscored by PSG, Bayern, Dortmund, Barcelona and Man City and Liverpool. So they're a thrilling team to watch. I think they're going to cause some upsets in the Champions League this year as well.
Yeah.
And I can absolutely see them holding on to top four once again. The biggest concern for them was keeping hold of their players.
Right.
Yeah. The thing with them over the last years is it's not just an achievement of reaching this level. They've had their best players taken every year. The likes of Kessier, Cristante, Matteo Cadara, who we've all mentioned already. They have their best players pulled apart every single year. This year, they've managed to hold on to them all, apart from Gianluca Mancini, who's replaced Manolas at Roma.
Yeah.
But they kept Duvan Zapata, who was talking about, a 50 million moves to the Premier League or to Napoli.
Well, he was, when we spoke to Christian Vieri early in the year, he was one of his top three strikers in Serie A.
Yeah,
he had him right up there ahead of Dries Mertens and a load of other names. Mm. Like, he's... seriously impressive. Talk about late breakouts. Was he 26, 27 or something like that?
Yeah, I think he might be even slightly older than that. Yeah.
And he's just suddenly, it's all clicked.
It's all clicked. It's suddenly, I think maybe he's found somewhere that he feels really comfortable, finds home and a system that suits him.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's started banging in goals and fair play to Gasperini for working that out, to be fair.
So who are people looking out for in this Atalanta side? They obviously excite you.
So it's all about a front three. So you've got Jose Ilicic, you've got Papu Gomez, the captain,
Papu.
And Duvan Zapata. And they're a brilliant front three, every single one of them. I mean, Ilicic has been, he's a player who's never really found consistency, absurdly talented, is a very big player with an unbelievable touch, brilliant skill, but he's never really been consistent. And Gasperini's got that out of him. So, he's a really, really fun player to watch. And again, there was talk about him joining Napoli, but really he's found the place that, he's played best for, the best player of his entire career. So he's in the right spot. Ilicic is always going to be in a region of sort of 20 goals and assists a season. He's a talisman, kind of the modern Mr. Atalanta, if you like.
Papu.
Papu, that is, yeah, Alejandro Gomez. Watch out for his dance as well when he scores and celebrates.
Yeah, if you haven't, if you're listening to this and you haven't heard or seen the Papu Gomez song, it's very much worth searching "Dance Like Papu" on YouTube and having a listen and a watch, because it is something else.
It's great.
And we can use it as like the Mario Gomez button almost. Like every time he scores, do the Papu dance.
I think it actually went gold in Italy as well. Like he's got the plaque.
He has 42 million
views on YouTube. This is not some small thing. Like this is a big deal.
Yeah. Papu is a big deal.
He's a very, very talented footballer. He's had a really weird career. I was looking this up the other day, and he spent some time in Ukraine where he demanded to go to Metalist Kharkiv after his first season in Serie A. Went there and then was like, nah, they got banned from the Champions League. He was like, I don't like this. Went back to Atalanta, saved them from relegation, has basically been there ever since, which is a really cool little story.
It's a great story. And a bit of a late bloomer. He's, I think, 31 now. I genuinely think if he was a few years younger, there'd be so much more interest. He could play for most clubs in Europe. I think he's one of his underrated players in Europe.
He's also just like a favoured son of the city now as well, isn't he? Like he is that club. Like he is the face of it. And you don't really want to throw that away. Or like maybe it's kind of like a source of your power style scenario where like I feel like Wilfried Zaha is better for Palace than he would be for anybody else. And Papu is better for Atalanta than anyone.
And you
don't want to ruin that.
No, it's a very much him. It's kind of fitting, I suppose, that he is going to captain the club in their first Champions League season, given what he has become as a token of that club, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. He's really the guy to watch in the Champions League this year. Like I said, they only lost one player, Gianluca Mancini, which is the most important thing for them to actually keep it together this year, replaced by Martin Skrtel. So we'll see how he does free agency.
We will see how he does.
Is the stadium ready? It's been like half knocked down, isn't it?
They're playing at Milan in the Champions League, or at San Siro.
Oh, I see.
I think it's been reduced to something like 40,000 capacity. So it's going to be different to them. Bergamo's just down the road, so that's kind of their next local thing.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay. Right. Then who have you got in at the next spot, Gov?
All right. So that leaves two. The two genuine challengers, I think. The two teams who can actually compete with Juventus for the title. We've got Napoli and Inter. Napoli have been the second best team in Italy since Sarri arrived.
Yes.
Comprehensively. I think this is where that ends. I think this is Inter's turn to take over.
All right.
Look, this iteration of Juventus and Napoli, I can't see them ever getting closer than Sarri did. 91 points and didn't win the title is unprecedented.
It's heartbreaking, is the word.
I imagine Liverpool fans have some sort of real deep affinity for that Sarri side now.
Yeah, especially since in that run, Napoli beat Juventus, didn't they, late on?
Yeah, that'd be Koulibaly.
Because Koulibaly scored a header to make it 1-0 and they it was like, it's on, it's happening, and it just kind of fell away again. Really sad. And you think, really, they're no closer to that. Actually, they're even further away.
I don't think so. I mean, they got 91 points that season. That was two seasons ago. Last season, they got 79 points in Carlo Ancelotti's first season. Inter and Juve are going to put up big numbers. You're going to have to get a lot closer to that 91 to be in the contention for the title.
Yeah.
I don't see it happening. I mean, they've made some good signings. Manolas is a sensational defender. Him and Koulibaly. It should be a great partnership.
The quickest partnership
definitely.
In the world football, potentially.
FIFA 20 vibes here.
There really is.
Play with Napoli when you get this game. Mertens, maybe having Lozano if he signs. You've got the quickest centre-back pairing. It's going to be fun. Good technical midfield as well. If they can't win anything, they at least win FIFA 20's most fun team to play, in my opinion.
Before we've played a game.
Before we've played it.
Yeah. Where do you see them falling down, Gov?
I think the player who could potentially have made a difference would have been James Rodriguez. They were pushing to get him on loan. Real Madrid clearly only wanted to sell. Is that the kind of player that could have made a real difference? And, the superstar signing, who's got a point to prove to everyone, would he have made a difference, possibly? Irving Lozano looks like he's going to be coming in. I think in the long term, he might be an even better signing than James would have been. Whether that happens immediately as, the kind of guy that arrives and scores loads of goals, I'm not too sure.
What does question? Like, he does play the exact same position as Lorenzo Insigne here.
Yeah, I was thinking
the
this.
Exact same position.
Well, so they've had Insigne in this kind of 4-4-2 where he's been up front with a Milik or a Mertens or someone like that. So, but then they've had Fabian Ruiz on the left-hand side and in the kind of flat four. Will Lozano play there? Where does Ruiz go? Maybe he comes back into the middle. So if they do sign him, Ancelotti's got a lot to work out.
Yeah.
Fabian Ruiz is some player, and he's just going to continue like ticking along in Napoli until he's bought by one of the biggest clubs in the world, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he signed a new contract earlier this window when there was talk about him going to Real Madrid. So, you know, there's interest already.
Yeah, there we are. That's the level we're at.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Like, Napoli are brilliant, but I think they've regressed slightly under Ancelotti. And I think maybe that's to be expected given how good Sarri was for them and how, you know, incredible that style of football was. But, you know, is this year he changes it around a bit? You know, we've seen him go to that 4-4-2. Will he bring it back to a 4-3-3? There's a lot of talent in that midfield. Like we said, you know, Fabian Ruiz, Alan, Zielinski. They've brought in Elmas as well, yeah. who's a very, very good player for what it's worth. And we've seen them have success with wing play before. So maybe this is the year that he kind of goes back to that and expands upon it a little bit.
Possibly. I mean, it did feel a bit like Ancelotti was trying to do different things quite differently, not for the sake of doing things differently, but just to make a major change from where they were before. But I think this is kind of what Carlo does. He gets a squad of really good players and just kind of gets them all in somehow. You know, it's what he did at Madrid. It's what he's done at Chelsea. You know, just kind of getting these really good players to create a good dressing room and get everyone playing well together. So, you know, they've got a chance, but I don't see them competing with Inter.
Okay,
so let's get on to Inter. Yeah, then. Let's talk about. Do you think Inter can beat Juventus this season?
I do.
That's the big question.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Right.
Like I said, I could not see previously how this was going to happen. But one man has arrived, Antonio Conte, the man who started this Juventus dynasty. They were seventh before he took over. He took them on their first season to go with the title. You know, the former captain. Now he's at Inter. Big moment.
And, Juventus captain crossing the Derby d'Italia divide is a big moment.
It is, and I'm sure that's going to have damaged his... Well, it has damaged his reputation in the eyes of a lot of Juventus fans.
Yeah.
And he's partnered with Beppe Marotta, the guy who built that team for him or with him at Juventus.
Yeah, the sporting director.
Exactly. So they have really... They've backed him to the hill. They've given Conte pretty much everything he wants. They're kind of missing a final striker at the moment. But they're building this team perfectly for him. So they've signed Diego Godin, so they can play his trademark three at the back. So we've now got Godin, Milan Skriniar, Inter's best player, and Stefan De Vrij as a three centre-back.
It's some back three.
It's amazing.
That's a great
It is amazing.
And really, the partnerships next season in Serie A, so you've got that three, Koulibaly, Manolas at Napoli, as we said, and Juventus, De Ligt and Chiellini. You've also got Bonucci and the rest of
Rugani
the
well.
Exactly.
And,
Demirel,
all the rest signings. Of,
and all the other
the
ones.
Troops. Juventus' 50-man defensive squad.
Italy's C team out here finishing third in Serie A.
So, you know, we've said over the last few years that the defending in Serie A has got lower.
It has got worse.
It has got worse. But really, I think there's now three of the best five. I mean, you know, best centre-back partnerships in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's got better? Maybe Real Madrid, Ramos and Varane.
In theory. But
theoretically.
Yeah, but they need to actually play like it. Longley Piqué is very good. Mm-hmm. Laporte and whoever is very good. Van Dijk and whoever is very good. Outside of that, we're talking Serie A defences.
Yeah, those three are big. So, so Inter have got this back three for Conte to use. He's going to play, they've given him a new right-back.
Yeah, Lazaro.
So he's a former winger for Hertha who was converted into a right-back. So he's now kind of landing in somewhere in the middle, which is perfect. You know, we don't need the best player of all time at right wing-back, as you saw with Victor Moses at Chelsea, became a perfectly functional player for that team.
Yep, he did.
Looks like Biraghi from Fiorentina is probably going to be coming in at left wing-back as well to fill that hole, which means maybe Kwadwo Asamoah won't be playing.
Oh, that's blasphemy.
That's a heartbreak.
Kwadwo is my guy, and he has to play. He's one of my all-time favourite players.
I really hope Biraghi doesn't leave your team. They really need him.
Oh, well, they are building his squad.
They're building his squad. And he's got a whole new midfield pretty much as well. We've got Brozovic is still going to be there. And then the two...
The crocodile himself.
Exactly, the crocodile himself. So we'll see. I mean, he's still doing that every game, by the way. Every time someone's got a free kick, he's
He also wasn't the first person to do it.
No, Brozovic has his nickname because he lies down behind the wall at free kicks to stop the low crosses coming in. And it is very funny. And now he just calls himself Il Crocodilo, which is just really ridiculous. But
he wasn't the first person to do
fun.
It. No, he still does it all the time.
It just works on a big stage.
It's important. It's important. Who else is going to be, say, obviously, in that midfield?
So we've got Nicola Barella, who they've just signed from Cagliari, a 40, 50 million euro player. So he's a starter for Italy.
Yeah.
So he's a really good kind of all-action midfielder. Can do a bit of everything. and Stefano Sensi, who they've just signed from Sassuolo, who already in pre-season looks magic, kind of diminutive playmaker.
I love Sensi. He looks so good. Wonderful footballer.
He's going to be the craziest spark in his side. And then up top, they've got Lukaku.
Yep.
Who, you know, we can debate. We've all seen his first touches. He seems to always score goals.
Lukaku is going to score 30-plus this season.
Yeah, really? I mean, he's look, he has his flaws, but he's very consistent at putting the ball in the back of the net.
He's a brilliant goal scorer.
And he is the player that Conte's always wanted.
Yeah.
And this is the reunion of it, basically, where it's like he wanted him at Chelsea, he ended up going to Man United, and Conte ended up getting Alvaro Morata. That didn't really work out so well. So now this is kind of like, it's almost like a summer do-over, where like at Chelsea, this should have happened. It didn't. Now it's happening in Milan. And I think it's going to work really, really well.
We'll finish. Who's going to play wide, and then we'll close this one off.
We've got Lautaro Martinez up in the two with him, and they're looking to sign another striker as well. So we'll see who they end up with.
Murmurs at the moment is Alexis Sanchez, but we'll see what happens with the wages.
There's a lot of talent here, like a lot of talent. The question for me is depth. How much depth does this Inter side have if Lukaku gets injured? If Stefano Sensi gets injured, who comes in to plug those gaps when you know they're playing a big and a long season where they're going to have to, you know, juggle a lot of competitions? Has Conte got that? I know how much he likes to stick with a team that he's got, and that does occasionally wear them out.
Yeah, for sure. So I think it tends to last a season, as we saw with Chelsea, although that Chelsea season he didn't have Champions League football to contend with, which he does here. But there is some depth. They've got Gagliardini, Vecino, who always seems to pop up with a big goal when they need it. So they've got a couple of midfielders there.
They've got tons of midfielders. I'm just looking at the squad list. Like Brozovic, Barella, Vecino, Sensi, João Mário. I'm sure they're trying to get rid of him, to be fair. Gagliardini, Borja Valero.
I was going to say, is Borja Valero still there? Because like, Borja Valero is one of my favourite players ever.
And I'm entirely with you. I'm really hoping for that dream return to Fiorentina. That's the one that the new project needs to bring
it
in.
It does need it, yeah. They've got tons of players. They might be a little bit light at centre-half.
So they've got Bastoni, who's an Italy under 21 or 20 captain, centre-back. So he's one that they're looking at to make a splash this season. I think Godin might be questionable for the first few weeks of the season.
I saw he'd been ruled out for the first, for August, basically.
Miranda's kicking about as well.
Miranda's no longer there, but Ranocchia is kicking about.
Correct.
Yeah, and they've got... what happened to Dalbert?
So he's supposedly off to Nice when... back to Nice.
Right.
His tenure at Milan has been an absolute disaster.
Yeah, it's been a proper disaster.
I don't understand what happened.
He's been rubbish. Right, Sam, can Inter win the league?
No. Okay. But it's within 6 or 7 points.
So they come second?
Yes.
You
they
think
do.
Inter comes second?
I like what Gov has come to me with.
What's your top six? Run it down from 6 to 1 and then we're gonna move.
I would go for Juve, then into Inter, then into Napoli. Atalanta, Roma, and then Milan in 6. So only one slight difference.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you, Sam. And thank you very much to Alex for that. Coming up after the break is everybody's favourite part of the show, apart from the poem. It's roulette and nonsense rankings. Don't go anywhere. It's that time again. It is Bleacher Roulette. Sam, do you want to start us off? Spin this wheel.
I shall indeed. Without stopping to think, name 3 games you reckon you could beat Cristiano Ronaldo at.
Chess.
Oh, my God.
Chess.
Fine. Chess is one. Monopoly. I bet he doesn't play.
Bananagrams. Scrabble.
What is Bananagrams?
It's like Scrabble, but there's no board. And you just have to, basically make words up as quickly as possible.
The one where it just becomes, almost like a labyrinth of tiles.
Correct.
I could definitely beat him at that as well. Yeah, Scrabble, all that stuff. Anything word-related, I reckon I could do.
Mastermind.
Depends what the subject is.
Noughts and crosses.
Noughts and crosses is a good pick.
Anything you could beat, Cristiano?
I was actually going to say noughts and crosses. I fancy myself there.
Poker.
Connect four. I tell you what, we definitely couldn't beat any footballers at Uno.
No.
They play it religiously.
Absolutely not. Okay, right. Cool. Right, spin for Gov then, Sam.
What is your favourite thing to do at halftime?
Connect four. Bananagrams.
Scrabble! I always play Scrabble at halftime. At a game or TV?
Both.
At home, I'm making a cup of tea.
Right.
Every single time. Or a beer, depending on the time of the game, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, if it's before midday, a beer. Afterwards, cup of tea.
At a game, I'm probably going to the toilet. I'm not getting in the queue to the drinks.
I've already gone to the queue. I've gone to the drinks. I've sent someone else actually. 42 minutes.
And I've already been to the toilet. I don't do that at half time. That's the sucker's game. Yeah. Not a chance. I'm going down, I'm getting a pie.
There are certain rules. You can't leave games early, but you can leave at half time early to get a pint.
I think they're the same. You can't leave before the end of the game, also can't leave before the end of the half. What if someone scores a 45th minute and
but what if then you don't get a pint?
And what if then you get stuck in the queue for the toilet?
Yeah, that's a nightmare.
You've got 15 minutes.
It's not enough time. It's not enough time. At home, same as Gov, get a beer. Not a tea, though. I do not drink tea.
You don't, yeah.
I'm like maybe the only Englishman who just absolutely despises tea.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know.
No, I mean, I'm sure you're not, but it's...
I'm the only one I know of.
The only one you know. I like a cup of tea.
Give me a shout if you're English and you hate tea. We'll form a club.
The anti-tea club. Right, okay. On that note, I'm going to give it a spin. Which song would you sing if you were at a football club and you had to do an initiation song?
Oh, mate. Candle in the Wind, Elton John.
Wow, emotional.
That's a really dark answer.
I need to get the room in the right kind of mood for my arrival.
Great. Okay, Gav, what would you sing?
I'm a terrible singer, so
doesn't matter.
Maybe I'd have a go at rapping or something because I mean I can't rap, but I can't sing to save my life. So.
Could you give any song a go?
Maybe something kind of rocky. We go some like AC/DC or something, so we don't have to try and hit so many notes. Just shout a bit.
That's fine. Hit your comfort zone. Stay in it.
You've got to find your gap.
You only have to do it for like a minute and then you can sit down and forget about it for the rest of your life.
I know the whole 9 minutes of Rapper's Delight by the... So I might do that.
This is very much Jack's game because Jack likes to sing.
I do, yeah. So. I think the answer is actually That's Life. I'd bang out a bit Sinatra.
Would you?
Yeah, I'd go That's Life by Sinatra.
What's the best footballer initiation that you've seen? Because I remember Tammy Abraham absolutely killing.
I was going to say, Tammy Abraham's one springs to mind. It was at Aston Villa, wasn't it? Aston Villa when he went
was
alone.
He was absolutely sensational.
There have been some this week, which is, you know, why these have come up.
Some of the Bayern ones were really good.
Lucas Hernandez,
did he do the Spanish Fun song, which I cannot remember at all.
Yeah, I remember seeing Lucas Hernandez and thinking, yeah, not bad. Okay. Not bad at all, actually, okay. Lucas. So another string to his bow, apart from being really good at football, quite good at initiation songs. Woo! That is the nonsense siren, Sam.
Gov's eyes.
Gov's eyes lit up.
Woo!
What is this?
I think he was scared.
What's on nonsense this week?
Well, remember how last week's was educational?
Yeah.
Well, this is a bona fide rant. These are the three things that annoy me most in football right now.
Right, okay.
So at number three, this is a recent phenomenon. It's the remind me of this tweet function. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
So this is not strictly football, but it's being used a lot in this sphere. Have you seen this?
No.
Basically, if you see a tweet that you reckon you might be able to prove wrong and therefore sneer at someone in future, you can just tag a remind me of this tweet bot in the mentions of it. And then on the date that you specify, it will remind you that this person said this thing. Then you can check back on what everyone said and see if they're wrong, and then you can abuse them.
So you're now getting called out for being wrong.
Good grief. My 1-20 Premier League predictions... I must have got 100 remind me of this tweet in 9 months. Do you have nothing better to do with your lives? Like, seriously, ludicrous behaviour. And it's not just me, it's others as well, but I just feel particularly persecuted in this area.
Of course, was it two?
Number two is the crossing percentage completed stat. This is ridiculous, right? Right, this is
ridiculous.
This is a fundamentally broken statistic, right? It doesn't ever measure the quality of a cross. It just tells you whether or not it hit a teammate's body part or not. It doesn't take into account whether or not it was the right choice. It doesn't take into account whether it went so far over his head, he had to chase it to the corner flag to touch it to keep it in play. That's a completed cross. And conversely, if you're Alexander Kolarov and you smash in a low ball into Dzeko, it bounces off a few people but hits an opponent first and then it goes in, you've caused absolute carnage. It's a great ball into the box. It's an incomplete cross. So don't come to me with your completed cross statistics because it doesn't work and I don't accept them. Into number one.
I'm just going to let you run. I'm pretty happy here.
The N'Golo Kante position debate.
Oh, boy.
This is a good one.
Yeah, well, Gov, as a Chelsea fan, you would have been embroiled in this for the last 2 years or so. So I would be very interested to hear from those who insist that Maurizio Sarri played Kante in the wrong position, what they thought of his performance in the Super Cup. Because it was great, wasn't it? And it came from the same position that he played all season for Sarri. because he's never been the deepest midfielder in a three. That's always been the wrong answer. And I don't really understand why people have the idea that, he's the right one, because he played that role for, in Conte's first like five games or so, when Conte tried to play a 4-3-3, he put Kante as the deepest player. His passes and his touches went up, but his ground cover, tackles, interceptions, dribbles all went down. That's bad news. You don't want that. Kante needs to run up and down. Now, there may have been some systematic constraints from Sarri on Kante, but the answer was
is light.
The answer was never to swap him with Jorginho.
No.
And I don't like the fact that after the Super Cup, people started saying, oh, look at Kante, how amazing is he? Lampard's really set him free. To an extent, he has. But no one has ever misplayed Kante positionally except for Antonio Conte. He's the only manager ever to play him in the fundamentally incorrect position. Everyone else has done it right. It's just about the wider tactics around it that make it work or don't work.
It's got nothing to do with the position, is what you're saying.
He is a box-to-box number eight, whether that's in a two or a three. Don't play him as the sole holding midfielder. He would not thrive as the Jorginho. Don't put him there. It doesn't work. It wastes him. And the Super Cup is not evidence to the contrary.
Okay. Alrighty, well, thank you, Sam, I think, for that. That is us all wrapped up for this week. And all that's left for me to do is to say thank you very much to these two fellas. To Alex McGovern, would you like to chuck your social media handles out there for everyone to hear, Alex?
Yeah, that's AlexMcGovern11.
On Twitter?
On Twitter, yep.
On Twitter. Right, and as ever, thank you to the inimitable Sam Ty. I've been Jack Collins. Remember to get involved with all things pod using the hashtag BRFootballRanks. Get us on Instagram. Get involved with sending in questions for Hot Takes and Roulette. Get involved with the poll. Goes up on Twitter every week. If you haven't already, make sure you download the BR app. There are now in there club previews, in-depth club previews for over 15 different clubs across Europe with me, Sam and Dean. So get on and see what's happening there. Keep sharing the pod, keep inviting your friends, and we'll see you very shortly. Take care, Rank Squad. Peace.